Good afternoon. This is the Committee on Health and Human Services. It's Wednesday, February 18th. And we have a very full agenda today. At the beginning of every agenda, I probably should apologize, but because we are reduced in our committee hearings to an hour and a half, I've asked all committee authors to make certain that they stay within the time frame that we have for their bill. So I just would like the audience to know that I hope you've really reduced your testimony to those essential elements that are necessary for the community to understand the essential policy questions that are in the bill. And if we run out of time, we have decided we need to lay these things on the table rather than move them forward if people aren't quite ready to vote for them. I'd like you to be informed that we are going to begin a series of bills that are related to the mental health programs throughout the state, a full range across the whole continuum of mental health programs. And as is true in other areas, what we're trying to do in the committee is have a discussion of the subject, whether it's housing or disparities or mental health issues, attempt to get some groundwork laid for the committee to understand where we're at right now, where the gaps are, so that when bills come forward in these various subject areas, the committee understands how it fits into the continuum of services, particularly where the gaps are in the state of Minnesota. Senator Benson asked very specifically to have the mental health system be reviewed in terms of its existing programs and where the gaps are. And so that is going to take up a significant portion of today's agenda. Also, we have a couple of bills by Senator Goodwin that relate to places along the continuum of mental health services. I was sort of hoping with this introduction that we could get a quorum here in order to move Senate File 807 right away, but since we do not, I think that we'll set that aside and move ahead. Is the Assistant Commissioner here ready to present? Yes, and is Sue Abderholden here as well? Thank you. Would you mind, we'll just set aside Senate File 807 and begin our overview of the mental health system. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for being here. Are you going to begin? And if you are, would you introduce yourself and begin your testimony as soon as the technology works? Okay. I understand you're going to go back and forth a little bit on this. So if you don't, do you need some help with the technology? Remember, as you speak, to say your name into the microphone so that we know whose voice we're hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Jennifer DeCabellis, Assistant Commissioner for Department of Human Services, specifically with the area of community supports.
And Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness.
We do have a PowerPoint that if we are able to bring up, we will go through. Otherwise, we'll just be prepared to talk through it.
The PowerPoint slides are in our packet for those who would like to refer to it.
Madam Chair, members, we'll continue to work on bringing up the slide deck and we'll walk through the presentation without that. What we wanted to do today is give you a brief overview of the mental health system as it exists in Minnesota today, and we will, as we walk through that, talk a little bit about some of the gaps that we are seeing and where we have proposals that are moving forward through this process to look at filling some of those gaps.
And first, we were just going to make sure that everyone knew what a mental illness is. So it's a medical condition that disrupts a person's thinking, feeling, mood, ability to relate to others, and daily functioning. It affects roughly 1 in 4 adults and 1 in 5 children. Some key examples of mental illnesses would include major depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety disorders, panic disorder, PTSD, borderline personality disorder, and eating disorders. I think one important thing to note is that under our both Adult Mental Health Act and Children's Mental Health Act, it's not just having a mental illness that gets you into the system. You have to have more than that. So example, under the adult mental health system, you have to have a serious and persistent mental illness, which generally means you've been hospitalized 2 or more times during the previous 2 years, or you've been hospitalized or in residential treatment 6 of the last 12 months, treated by a crisis team 2 or more times within the previous 2 years, or committed in the last 3 years are just some examples. So generally you have to have, frankly, required a lot of intensive treatment before you get into services and supports instead of basic treatment. The funding for mental health is kind of varied, but really the way to think about it is that the way into the mental health system is through insurance. It's a health care condition, just like any other. It can be through a private plan or a state program such as medical assistance or Minnesota Care. I would say that insurance payments, largely through medical assistance, have been an increasingly important source of funding for mental health treatment. It used to be that those were social service dollars. We moved them, frankly, into Medicaid and Minnesota Care. We call it the model mental health benefit set, so that you're not put on a waiting list, in a sense, waiting for county dollars to become available, but it really is treated as a health care condition. One of the things I did want to mention is mental health parity, because that does impact how we can access private insurance. Mental health parity, just to be clear, does not require plans to cover mental health treatment. It just means if they cover them, they have to do it in the same way they cover other health care treatment. Under mental health parity, there can't be different quantitative limits, so you can't have an arbitrary number of therapy visits, for example. And there can't be qualitative limits, which means that if you cover rehab for a knee replacement, you should probably cover rehab after a psychotic episode. But I would say that the federal mental health parity regs are still fairly new, and how they actually will get implemented in Minnesota, we're not sure. Also, under MnSure, it's just important to note, because small individual policies and small group policies have been exempted from mental health parity laws. Under MnSure, all plans offered are actually required to both cover mental health services and follow mental health parity. And that, I think, is a really kind of important distinction to make. One thing I just wanted to add is that both Medicaid and Medicare actually discriminate against covering mental health treatment. Medicaid does not pay for what's called an Institute for Mental Disease, or IMD, which means they don't cover any residential program over 16 beds. This is why we have community behavioral health hospitals that are 16 beds or less, and this is why we can't use Medicaid at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. Also, under Medicare, an individual is limited to just 190 days of inpatient psychiatric hospital care during their lifetime. And so this really can impact older adults or people with mental illnesses as they become older in terms of having their hospital care paid for under Medicare. We also have state money that goes out for specific grants. Some of those include things like supportive housing, schooling to mental health crisis services, increasing cultural diversity, respite care, and evidence-based practices. Excuse me. There are grants to 18 regional adult mental health initiatives. That's about $39 million to meet the specific needs of their regions. There are also community support grants that go to each county, about $20 million, to fund programs such as drop-in centers or clubhouses that provide support and help with housing and employment. Counties also use their own funding to meet the needs of children and adults with mental illnesses in their community. We do have something called Children's Mental Health and Family Service Collaboratives, and this is where counties, school districts, local mental health entities, and juvenile corrections come together to provide integrated and coordinated services. Those services can include things like wraparound. That funding has decreased greatly over the last decade, and we have right now about $14 million that goes to that. For people who are uninsured or underinsured, they largely access treatment through the county or community mental health center. Community mental health centers are required to offer sliding fee schedules.
May I just pause there? Is that sort of the overview for the funding for mental health?
Yes.
I might just pause to see if anybody has any questions at this point. Thank you. Please continue.
And I would add that there are rich benefits in Minnesota, but you'll see as we talk through the services, the gaps across the state of where those benefits exist as far as program infrastructure varies throughout. I'm going to flip back for a minute to just show at the very first slide where we talked about the continuum of care. We're trying to make sure in Minnesota that we are not throwing all of our dollars and resources and programs into deep end services, but that we have an equal distribution across that continuum of care so that we have dollars that are working for prevention and early intervention, as well as dollars and services for treatment services and recovery services. If we put everything into crisis services, we've missed the opportunity, unfortunately, to prevent those crises from happening in the first place and to use our dollars wisely as far as diverting some of the folks that could get early intervention and services and not need those higher cost crisis-driven services in the first place. So you'll see on here we've put a continuum of care of what exists in the adult mental health, and we have a similar slide for children's mental health. And we've put this as a continuum. It is not an exhaustive list of all the programs and services, but it absolutely is the big bucket programs that exist across the state. And we tried to show that this is on an intense city level. So I'll walk you through each of these areas. But the outpatient therapy, I would say there's things in the continuum even earlier than that, just as far as assessment and early intervention and identification in the schools, in child care settings, in places of employment. But ultimately, at the point that somebody has been identified as needing mental health services, that outpatient therapy has a wide range of group therapies, individual therapies that are available to individuals. The ARMS program, moving up from there, is rehabilitation services. So we tried to put the acronyms down below, the Adult Rehabilitative Mental Health Services. These are skill-based interventions that are working with individuals on understanding what is their illness, what are the triggers to relapse, if they have been through recovery, what do they watch for as far as early warning signs for needing to increase the level of services. It could be medication management, understanding their diagnoses. It's anything that helps us get increased functioning with the individual and keeps them in the community.
May I just interrupt? So the outpatient therapy, if I were to synthesize in my own mind what you're saying, is this is a person, this is not prevention, this is where a person is going to have a diagnosis and receive an intervention, but the acuity in order to be able to be treated on an outpatient basis is lower than it might be later in the system if someone's disorder is more severely crippling, they might be in a more structured environment. So the outpatient is very minimal structure, and it aligns with the level of acuity of the illness. And then ARMS is, now the ARMS might be a person that has been through a treatment program further down the line that is coming back and is maintaining the highest level of wellness that they can with a existing maybe chronic disease or a diagnosis of mental illness. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members, that is correct. And what I think is important to understand is people are going to move through different levels of care and different needs at any given time. It's not that somebody fits in a bucket. Clearly, based on the needs and the supports, we often talk about dialing up or dialing down supports. They're, you know, trying to get away from a model where individuals in the community are starting to have increased symptoms, increased struggles, impacts to functioning. We don't want to immediately put them into inpatient care. How do we dial up supports, dial down supports to meet their individual needs at any given time?
And also someone, Senator, who is on ARMS services may still be getting outpatient services with therapy, meeting with their psychiatrist, that type of thing.
Continuing on through that, mobile crisis, you've heard a lot about mobile crisis teams. Again, we have a lot of disparities across the state about how large these teams are and if teams even exist in certain areas, and we have a slide that gives you a picture of that. But mobile crisis really is meant to be an immediate 24/7 response team in the community that works to help people stay in their homes, in their communities with a rapid response, creating safety plans, creating interventions or monitoring, making sure they get in front of the right services so that they're not going to higher acute care services.
And it's also really a healthcare response to a healthcare issue, which I think is a really important point to make.
Day treatment and partial hospitalization, again, increased intensity. Usually that is a 3 to 5 days a week where an individual, instead of going to an inpatient venue, can go in 3 to 5 days a week for 3 to 4 hours a day where they can get more intensive group therapy, individual therapy, see a psychiatrist, do some medication monitoring on a more intensive basis, so the frequency and the intensity is greater, but keeping them in their home environment so that they don't have to go into an inpatient bed. ACT Services is assertive community treatment teams. This is really for individuals that have more complex needs and need more intensive interventions and monitoring. ACT teams by Fidelity are a team approach, so a psychiatrist or prescriber with social workers, nursing supports, in case management supports, working really as a team. There is the Fidelity is about a 1 to 100 for a team to cap at 100 individuals on any given ACT team. Caseload size is usually more 1 to 10 on a case management level, where we're able to respond, again, 24/7 to meet the unique needs and really provide supports in the home. Going in to see what is the home situation looking like, what are the things the individual is struggling with, and how do we make sure they're getting the proper supports to avoid hospitalizations.
And it is an evidence-based practice, and there is an enormous amount of research showing that it definitely decreases hospitalizations, particularly for people with schizophrenia.
ERTS, the individual residential treatment, intensive residential treatment services, really is both a diversion from inpatient care as well as can be a step down. Typically, 0 to 90 days length of stay in those, but that is not a hard set rule. If somebody needs longer term care, they can get an extension of that time frame. And many people don't need that level of intensity. It may be a 30-day stay. But typically, it is a residential program that combines some of that skill-based training. So let's work with individuals on how do they manage their illness outside of an institution. What are the daily living supports that they need to have in place in order to be successful in the community? And so it is a gradual, let's increase their level of independence, their level of self-management of their illness, so that we can ultimately get them into a community setting or divert them from needing to go into inpatient care.
May I ask, at this point, anybody that's in this, in at these varying levels of structures, what I call them, that it's from least structured to more intensive structure, at the ERTS level, the person that is there receiving those supports, by and large, acknowledges that they have, do they have insight that there is an issue? Do they acknowledge that? In order to really develop the capacity to self-intervene, they have to somehow have some agreement that there is a problem. Is that pretty true for the population that's using the residential crisis?
Madam Chair, members, in order to be eligible for a rehabilitation service, there needs to be an ability to learn new information and to retain that information. I would say, though, people are on different levels of that spectrum of how much coaching and cueing do they need in order to get those independent skills based on where they are in their illness or in their recovery. And so it's very individualized, but we need to be able to show that there is improvement in their functioning ability as a part of that program.
In order for what? You have to have demonstrable outcomes of improvement in order to what? Justify the payment or? Okay.
If I could add, Senator Sharon, you might still have people who don't have insight into their illness but can still be involved in their treatment plan because there are still goals that they have in life, even if they don't want to admit that they have a serious mental illness. And through motivational interviewing and techniques like that, you can still move someone forward on a treatment plan and help them get better.
So they might not have, they might not acknowledge that they have a paranoid process going on. Okay.
Additional levels, hospital level of care. I know that you are aware we have hospital beds across the state of Minnesota. There are struggles getting people in to the hospital level of care, which is why we want to maximize those alternatives for people who don't need to be there. There are struggles getting folks out once they're stabilized because of the community supports, and we will talk a little bit about what that community support infrastructure looks like. But hospitals really are to do that stabilization. Typically a 7 to 10 day stay is what we're looking at, though again, nobody is typical, and so there are individuals who need longer term stabilization in order to get their functioning level where they need it to be. And there's individuals who rapidly respond and get through recovery and back into the community. And direct care and treatment. These are the state-operated services as that final piece of the continuum. And it really is for individuals with complex needs who do need longer stays, who maybe need an increased staffing. These are the direct services that the state operates. Who tend to be individuals that have not been able to get to a point of recovery in the community or with these other supports and really need more intensive interventions or longer lengths of stay to stabilize functioning.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sue, Ms. Abderholden, this is great to see this continuum of service supports. It's something that I think you've spent your entire life trying to work together. And when we worked together many years ago, that was always something you were going at. And I'm still hearing, and I'm going to ask the same question when it comes to the school-linked services as well. I'm still hearing from families that especially in this case, the adult services, there's still a misunderstanding of how, especially if a child is up to age 22 in Minnesota, remember, there's still access to FAPE. So there's still a gap in understanding what a true accommodation or a reasonable accommodation is and a true modification. And what are we doing to close that gap with the Department of Education, specifically those providers of special education services to children at this end of the spectrum and not necessarily in the youth linked? And I'll follow that up later with the same question regarding school linked services. But is that still, do you still see that, Sue, as a gap that's needed? And how is the department coming forward and helping sing kumbaya on this stuff?
Senator Sharon, Senator Hoffman, so that's not an easy question to answer. I would say that the development of youth ACT teams has helped us. Those are fairly new, but especially for youth that have really more intensive mental health needs, that is one good thing. We have been working with the Department of Education to think about transition services differently for youth who are living with a mental illness. One of our problems is that youth with mental illnesses often have one of the highest dropout rates, so they're not even in school to be able to benefit from transition services. And what we've often seen is that education is focused on trying to get those young people a job, and what we have really wanted to see is to have those young people actually finish their education and get a diploma. If you've been out of school a lot because of residential treatment or day treatment, you're not getting a full day of education, and so by the time you leave, you're behind. We have been working hard with the various departments to try to pull it together to really think about the needs of those youth a little differently than they have in the past.
Ms. Abderholden, you are also going to go through a youth continuum here. So if you could hold your question, Senator Hoffman, I think what we've asked here is for a discussion of the existing continuum and a discussion of the gaps. So then following that, I think we can, instead of moving over to the children's or the adolescent section, right, to allow them to complete their presentation. Senator Hoffman.
Ms. Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Specifically, when you're talking about adult mental health services, those children 18 and above up to age 22 have feet in both camps, and they are adult services as well. So I think she just validated what I'm hearing from folks in the community. And this is, it calls for a deeper discussion, especially what our agency's doing to stop acting in pilot, into little silos and start working collaboratively, because there's a big tail there, and I think Ms. Abderholden started bringing it up. But I will hold that comment.
My hope is that the outcome of today is that these experts help us see where the gaps are, and that the initiatives we make in legislation are related to sustaining what we have, but also filling in some of those gaps. So this is the basis for a series of legislation that's going to be coming forward so that we can understand what we are going to agree to fund or support somehow relates to the analysis that's being done about where these gaps exist.
Thank you.
So would you please continue?
Madam Chair, Senators. The Children's Mental Health Services, you'll see similar naming conventions across that and some nuances, so I will highlight the nuances in the Children's Mental Health Services. The CTSS is Children's Therapeutic Services and Supports, is that similar rehabilitation component of how do we get the right teaching, skills-based training and interventions in front of families and youth. So in this instance, it's not just the youth, it's also the family members, it could be the school systems, it could be other providers, but really is that skill-based, functional, let's making sure everybody hits their potential early on. I would say another differential on this is the residential treatment programs. This is often referred to as our Rule 5 or Rule 2960s facilities. You heard Sue Aberholden mention earlier the IMD, the Institute for Mental Disease, that we often hit against. These are programs that are hitting against that rule potentially, where we can draw federal funding if we play within that 16-bed capacity. And we're having discussions with those programs because we have over 800 of these children's residential beds that are serving a unique need in the community. You'll see on here also is PRTF, our psychiatric residential treatment facility, and it has some asterisks by it. This is in one of the proposals of where we see a gap, and we can talk a little bit more about it. But we have, according to a county survey, about 300 youth who are not able to be in a hospital bed, but are also not able to be served in these residential beds that currently exist, and they're falling between those cracks. And it really is individuals that have highly aggressive behaviors, either to themselves or to others, so either self-inflicted or outward aggression, where the staffing level needs to be different to provide the right kind of safeties and supports. Critical population that has high needs, we don't want them. Families struggling in the homes or families putting them in out-of-home placement because they can't manage them if we can provide this level of service and supports to those individuals. The PRTF model also has an IMD waiver attached to it. So it is a federal benefit, and it does not hit against IMD. So it allows us to staff for the complexity of the population but not have to do so within that 16-bed limitation, which in some areas becomes a cost-prohibitive model to follow. Again, we don't want to build huge institutions, so we want to control for what that looks like, but making sure we're meeting the needs of a complex population whose needs are not being met today.
And if I could just add one other thing that makes it difficult for families of children with mental illnesses is that I know you all know about the TEFRA program that waives the family income limits in order to have the child access kind of the array of services that are available under Medicaid. There is a different standard for children with a mental illness versus children with a developmental disability. Children with a developmental disability, if they need out-of-home, if they would meet the criteria for out-of-home placement, are then eligible. Children with a mental illness need to meet hospital level of care, which is greater. It's a federal issue, not a state issue, but it's another kind of discriminatory element that's a part of it that makes it then very hard. Since your private insurance doesn't cover much of the intensive services, you are then looking at what can you do, and you aren't going to meet the TEFRA guidelines. So we have far fewer children under TEFRA than we do for developmental disabilities.
And one of the things I've noticed that we missed on this was the respite care for children, which is a critical level of service and care. I mentioned that we really want to support families who are dealing with difficult illnesses, difficult behaviors, and keeping those youth in their homes with their families intact. We know that we get better success rates as a result. So child respite is a critical service, and we do have a proposal in the governor's budget to extend those crisis respite programs as well. And the crisis respite really is an opportunity for the families to get a little bit of breathing room, to de-escalate hot situations in home environments, get the youth some supports that they need, get the family the supports without putting somebody in an inpatient bed in order to do that. So it's a brief respite for the family, so that we can get professionals involved and work with them on de-escalating situations and keeping that family intact.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, something I wanted to ask Ms. Abderholden about what you were just saying about TEFRA. I understood why you were saying that TEFRA has a lot fewer people with children with mental health in it than developmental disabilities. Then you said it was a federal issue because the feds define what they cover under Medicaid. So in other words, we could try and change TEFRA, but they still wouldn't qualify for medical assistance under the federal law. We can't change that part.
No, Senator Sharon, Senator Marty, no. But it has been on the kind of list of issues that our national organization has been working on for some time.
Senator Marty.
And Madam Chair, I'm not suggesting this is realistic then, but in other words, if we wanted to get the services to folks like that, you could do TEFRA, but then you, instead of what you'd be paying TEFRA to cover would not be eligibility for medical assistance. It would be eligibility for some other program, Minnesota Care type of thing, for children with mental illness, which is convoluted and be 100% state expense. But
that's
it
correct.
Would be doable in a sense.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, that's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Yes, if the state paying for the federal responsibility again. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. DeCabillis, you said that the governor's proposal for respite was crisis respite. Is that true? So it would be respite only when you got to the crisis piece? I was trying to remember the proposal. Because, I mean, in the community, when I was there, it was respite before you're desperate was always the the model that we were kind of after.
Correct.
Is it?
Correct. Madam Chair.
Commissioner, I want to make sure you say your name so that, or I say your name so that we have it on the record. So, Commissioner DeCabillis.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, yes, that is correct. It is a respite that allows the family to take a break and get an individual in services. Sometimes it is when things are escalating at home. It's watching for those trigger points.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
But it's just a standard respite. It's not only to serve those in crisis. It's standard respite care, and the family may be in crisis, but hopefully it's just a little rest so that they can maintain that stable home environment.
You know, this name is going to be hard for me to keep saying, Assistant Commissioner DeCabillis. So we've got to shorten this up a little bit. Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, that is correct.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Please continue.
This slide we can talk through. So part of what we showed you was the continuum of services. We know that those continuums of services without additional supports don't meet the individual needs of Minnesotans that are struggling with mental illness. What we have is a kind of a range of other services and supports that we know are critical. And I'll highlight a few, and Sue may have others. The supportive housing is critical. So we often hear that individuals are in the jail or hitting the hospital system when the reality is they have an unstable housing situation, that if we could provide additional supports in the community, it's housing with supports, that we could keep them in outside of those crisis venues. And so it's a critical area. We have individual pilot programs that have showed a 50 to 70% cost reduction by getting individuals the proper supports in the community related to their housing in order to keep them out of those acute venues. So we do hear that that is often a driver into the correction system or to the hospital system. We also have supported employment. A cost saver as well as a better outcome for individuals. Individuals who are often in crisis, what we hear is that they need to be stabilized for a year and doing well in the community. Well, the reality is people can't do that if they can't sustain a livable income. So making sure that we provide supported employment along with the therapeutic interventions to stabilize their illness are critical components in order to stop that crisis cycle, which is often what puts people into a crisis venue to begin with.
And Senator, if I could just add.
Senator Abderholden.
The other thing to think about if you're an adult is that we all need a reason to get up in the morning. And without employment, you have no structure. Without employment, you may not see anyone else. And without employment, you have no money. And if you were to sit in your apartment all day, you know, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, and watching daytime TV, you will not get better. And so employment is just a really important piece.
Continuing through the list, targeted case management is oftentimes individuals, as we just laid out, have multiple services. Targeted case management is really aimed at how do we make sure those services are coordinated, individuals are linked, the services are working for them and are personalized, so making sure individual choice, individual need is identified, and that those services are coordinated across programs is critical. We have behavioral health homes. This is one of the proposals that is in the governor's budget. The behavioral health homes is working with the medical home model, but taking an emphasis to look at individuals with complex mental health needs or mental health needs in general, and making sure that we have a payment infrastructure that allows individuals, again, to target the resources, create an individualized plan, and pays them to coordinate linkages from mental health into primary care, linkages from primary care back to mental health and across the human services world as well as medical services. So again, it's paying for a team-based model of supports in the community, which ultimately get us better outcomes for individuals because the system isn't fragmented.
And the PIN project, Preferred Integrated Network, some of you might remember back from 2007, it was part of the Mental Health Initiative, was to bring together actually health care and social services. It's all in Dakota County as a way to try to see what happens if we integrate it.
Community support programs, again, initiatives to keep individuals in their communities and providing the unique supports that are needed to manage behaviors in the community. PCA, our personal care attendant, now called Community First Services and Supports, again, is working with individuals who may need some queuing, may need some personal attendant services in their home in order to take care of daily functioning needs, in order to have a safe environment in their home and stay out of institutional care.
And one change that was made to that, as many of you know, was to add in the word needing constant supervision, which we believe will actually kick a lot of people with mental illnesses off that program.
And the CADI waivers is Community Alternatives for Disabled Adults. This is the waiver program that is specific to individuals who have a disability and provides additional supports in order to support technology in the home that will keep them safe and in the community to support additional functional programs and services.
Senator Laurie.
Thank you. Back to the queuing and the issue around constant queuing and supervision versus the historic treatment. My understanding is that we have not received the federal authority to implement the CFSS program, and that's one of the issues still at play, is whether we're going to be allowed to do it as a as a constant queuing and supervision as the threshold for access to these services or not. And so just a clarification, right now it's not actually implemented it doesn't have to be constant, but that is still the proposal that's before the feds. Just to try to dig behind that a little bit. That's my understanding, and am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Good. We're running a little tight on time, so I want to make sure that we get to the gap analysis that you've done to help us understand where we're going.
And just briefly then, in terms of who provides mental health services, we just wanted to be sure that you knew that largely it's provided by community mental health centers that have to provide a wider range of services. We've got private hospitals, clinic networks, not-for-profit, in-home or day treatment providers, mental health professionals in private practice, and other nonprofit organizations. We only have 8 counties that actually provide some direct services, an array of services. So most of it is really done by community mental health centers across the state. Challenges.
And I think the challenges that still exist is the gaps, Senator Sharon, that you were looking to get to. And so we'll quickly try to run through these. Existing community capacity does not meet needs. I think one of the biggest highlights on this one is Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center has a constant wait list. As of last numbers, and this is a snapshot in time, the wait list was at 77 individuals. We do have a lot of proposals that are going through the governor's budget that are in the governor's budget proposal right now that are looking to target this very thing. And the concern is there are people who need to get into that level of care who cannot. There's people who have that level of care that cannot get out because we don't have the community supports, the capacity in the community to get them moved. So we've really got a bottleneck issue. And so what we've done is there's several proposals I would just quickly highlight. There is a proposal to increase the number of ERTs, those intensive residential, that is that step down to get the community's functioning level so that individuals can move into the community. We have some housing support proposals that are in there, looking again at the proper individual supports to pair with their housing that will help people have a safe environment to release to. We have mobile crisis teams. Again, the expansion and the ability for us to have some crisis standards and crisis capacity in different communities, and increased ACT programming and fidelity to those best practices.
And if I could add, Senator Sharon, one thing that, you know, has happened,
I
think especially over the last decade, is that the mental health organizations through the Mental Health Legislative Network have really worked closely with the Department of Human Services to identify the needs and figure out how to move forward. And much of what's in the governor's budget and that's even being proposed by the Legislative Network is building on those services that we know to be effective. So, you know, we've got data, we have evaluation results, and we want to make sure that they're available throughout the state and to the capacity that is needed.
The second item on here is children's services not being available in Minnesota. This specifically speaks to the psychiatric residential treatment facilities that I mentioned earlier, that we have about 300 youth with highly aggressive to self or other behaviors, that we have a new federal benefit that we're not utilizing in the state of Minnesota that we think would better meet their needs than falling through those, being in that gap currently. Rates are often insufficient to cover the cost of services. I think you've heard this quite a bit from the providers. We need to make sure that our provider base we have, and we'll show you in a minute a graphic that shows where we've got gaps in services even existing across Minnesota. But in order to maintain the level of service we have currently, there's an absolute need for us to look at the rates we are paying and making sure that providers can make ends meet so that we don't lose more programs or facilities across Minnesota.
And Senator Sharon, the other thing to note is that we often ask providers to do, you know, a list of 10 things, for example, for armed services, but then we only pay for 5. And so really looking more intensively at how do we set up those rates to make sure that we're paying for what we're requiring them to do is an important piece of the governor's budget.
So we're looking at rates in that. We are also looking at some immediate grants to be able to help ERTS providers stay in business and not have further shutdowns, as well as mobile crisis and some of our acute services that we know are struggling. While we look at a long-term rate structure, proposal is in there to fund some filling the gaps for where their costs are compared to where our rates are set today. Additional ones on here, lack of treatment services for the most acute children and adults. This is our ability to again, expand our crisis services and our reach to better meet the needs of individuals who are in that deeper end of services to support recovery so that we can help get them back into the community. Workforce issues, I know you've heard quite a bit about that in the state of Minnesota, the majority of the state is considered a mental health workforce shortage area, which means that even with funding, we need to solve some of the workforce challenges we have. In making sure that we have the workforce to meet the needs.
And, Senator, if I could add, one of the reasons that, you know, back in 2013 you increased school-linked mental health grants by 100%, you know, we think they're wonderful. But even expanding it beyond that right now would be difficult in some parts of the state because they won't have the workers to do that. You do have the report that came out from the Mental Health Workforce Summit. Senator Claussen, you know, was an active member of that committee, and I think there's some really excellent recommendations that are in that report that we should move forward on.
What is in the governor's proposal is an increase in psychiatric residency, increasing one additional slot in for psychiatrists. And then the final bullet on here is focus has been on treatment and interventions, leaving prevention and early interventions behind. We've learned across population health that the more we can invest in early identification and intervention, those are dollars wisely spent. So, in the governor's budget, there are several proposals around mental health consults, getting early child care agencies the training needed to identify and intervene early on. There is an ACEs proposal in there around trauma and how do we identify traumatic events with children so we prevent, again, the reoccurrences of those traumas and intervene earlier. We have first episode psychosis. How do we identify individuals in that first episode or pre-episode and get them in front of interventions versus waiting until the crisis has resolved? We have a school-based diversion, getting youth in schools schools, corrections, and human services and healthcare providers working together to keep kids in school instead of in our juvenile corrections facility.
And if I could add one thing, you know, I think it's difficult. We can't do really primary prevention because we don't really know all the different ways that people develop a mental illness. We can do secondary intervention, prevention efforts because we know who's at risk. You know, children who have experienced many adverse childhood experiences, we know that they're at risk. Genetics, you know, obviously plays a role. But tertiary intervention and prevention is where we really can have a huge impact by making sure that when someone develops a mental illness that it does not become disabling. And I think that what you see in the proposal is a little bit of the secondary and tertiary prevention efforts, which is where we can have a huge impact at this time.
And I would just have it, I know we're short on time, a couple more slides. This document shows where we have gaps, and I would say the reds are we don't have services in those areas at all. Yellow is we have some, we're not meeting the need. And the green is we're pretty close to meeting that need or we're meeting it. And I think these charts are helpful for us to say, where do we need services? Where is our critical focus? And I think the exciting part about this year's...
These slides were made available to us at the Health Policy Committee, I think. And we'll make sure that you get a larger copy of this so that you can dig into it a little further.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our copy is beyond... readable.
Madam Chair, members, in the back of your packet, too, you do have a packet that details the proposals that are in the governor's budget in more detail for your review.
And you also have a copy from the Mental Health Legislative Network about what their goals are, which I think you'll see there's a lot of similarity between the two.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this overview. And we did go over the governor's budget and did hear from Ms. Abderholden. And I thought that your characterization, you brought a construction cap with you. I don't know if you took it off of one of the guys working in the Capitol here on your way in.
I own my own.
That was your own, okay. But, I mean, the last two slides where we don't have the access, I mean, I think the point that really came across was that we have spent a lot of time trying to figure out what works to help serve people with mental health, and we actually have a pretty good idea of what works. We don't have the access to the continuum that we know works. And so we're building it. That was the point of the hat. We're building the access to those tools that we've tried and have been incredibly successful. And so I think that's that was a really powerful message that came through, and I think it bears repeating.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I greatly appreciate the overview as well. For those of us who aren't on the Finance Committee, if you could make sure that we get a copy of these slides that we could read, because I think it's very important for us to see, you know, where is it that we still are not meeting the needs, and so I'd like to make sure we get a copy of that. Thank you.
We'll be certain to do that. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just dawned on me. Thank you, Senator Lurie, for bringing that slide back up. What we know works anytime you're dealing with issues of disability, and especially in the case of mental health illness, I see that your family peer specialist doesn't even exist. And it's pretty sad because when you look at the parent-to-parent movement that we've known for many years, it's like there is so much effort in that. Maternal Child Health Bureau has spent tons of money. Family Voices of Minnesota, there's folks out there that have done this well. And when I start to see family peer specialists gone, it's like, where's the support, Sue?
Ms. Abderholden.
Senator Sharon, Senator Hoffman, that was passed in 2013 as part of the big Children's Mental Health Initiative, and it's just not been implemented yet. We have kind of two paths going forward, and it still has to be approved, my understanding is, by CMS. One way is through, actually, the Minnesota Association of Children's Mental Health is using a nationally-based program to train peer specialists, but we also, as part of the legislation, said we wanted families to be able to go through community colleges so that they can, you know, kind of work towards a college degree for some people, and that part is still being worked out with MNSCU. So we are moving forward on it. We're just not there yet.
Yes, Senator Hoffman.
One more point, and it's still, I saw the desired outcomes or the direction, and I'm not even going to attempt to say your name, but
and I'm Assistant Commissioner.
Assistant Commissioner, thank you. Welcome aboard, Assistant Commissioner. I saw with all that all the indicators of where you're going and what you're doing. It almost seems like DHS is taking this on by themselves, and I'm not seeing the connection with the Department of Education or Department of Public Health. Title V grants that are out there that say, you know, there's some disparity issues here. It's like we're still operating in this siloed effect. And then to see that Anoka Regional Treatment, you know, facility is number one on there on the waiting list. You know, there's still some serious issues at that facility, and there are three people here in this room that have been to that facility and have talked to folks there, and we still see some issues that are there. But I'm still concerned that you know, I wish the departments would all get together. It's almost like there's a federal law out there that says, you know, you should work integrationally. It was the comprehensive, coordinated, and complete Part C. That's what it was years ago. And it just dawns on me, stop operating in a silo, and please, let's like looking at each other effectively together.
Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, I your point is taken. We did do a hearing earlier with Department of Education around early childhood and our proposals specifically and how the mental health proposals work with the proposals that they have in the governor's budget. Similarly, we've done that around housing, working with MHFA and DEED around employment. So I hear you and respect what you're saying, and I do see that the departments are working together on targeted interventions, but you're right. We didn't probably portray that well in this presentation because it was coming from a DHS and stakeholder environment, and we'll watch for that in the future.
I really appreciate the time that you've given us today, and I would ask what we will be doing is coming back again in a year, and I would like us to have a baseline like this that lays out where we're green, a goal, doing pretty well, where there's, I don't know, what does yellow mean here?
That it exists, but not to the capacity that's needed.
And so that we can, in a year, see how these benchmarks have changed or moved as a result of the initiatives that we have. And I know that this committee consistently would like to make sure that as we discuss the outcomes earlier in Senator Lori's committee around Hearth Connections, how do we measure whether those investments create an outcome that we have established as the objective, some ability for us to go back and make certain that what we are doing, in fact, is improving the outcome for the people who are receiving the services. So with that, I think Senator Lori has a question.
Senator Sharon, it's a comment in building on Senator Hoffman's questions. We asked similar questions in HHS budget division about, you know, what's the broader Olmstead implementation, and we did get some information back from DHS. I think it might lead to more questions, but I've asked for that material to be brought over and be shared with this committee too, because that is the right question. How do we integrate and make sure that together, DEED, MHFA, you know, DHS, MDH, all of the entire state work to meet the challenge that is Olmstead, and so it's something that we're all keenly aware of and working hard to do. And so we did get an initial shot, and that'll be coming shortly.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Senator Benson.
And I'm only slightly joking. If we could get these laminated and left in our folders so whenever a mental health bill came, we could reference and figure out if we're working on a yellow triangle or if we're working on something red. Because we have a lot of things out of context as bills come individually. So to the extent you can help us understand if we're making progress on red items, yellow items, would be helpful going forward. Thank you.
Senator Lori was just saying that he'd be willing to be a test subject for some of these programs. I see our time is very tight. So what I would like to do now is something that I think will not take very much time so that we can leave the remaining 30 minutes for Senator Goodwin's bills. But I am here asking you to pass Senate File 807, another effort at moving some language forward rather quickly on the child protection provisions and updates. I was just in front of you this last week. You did pass the bill, and this Senate File 807 is essentially the same bill, with the exception that we add some language, if you'll note, on... I need to pass an amendment here,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
I need to pass the A1 amendment.
Would you like to pass the...
is an author's amendment.
Author's amendment. It's in the packet.
Yes, you have this.
So Senator Sharon moves to amend Senate File 807 with the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
And thank you. And so it is the language that on lines, if you look at the A1 amendment on lines A, or 110 through 129, I guess, because of the relettering. It simply adds some language that talks about health and safety of children being a paramount concern. It doesn't change the essence of what we pass, but it does align with the House language. We're trying to move this fairly quickly and avoid a conference committee. So what we will do is, instead of move the file forward that we voted on last week, we'll be moving this language forward to the floor. And that's as simple of an explanation as I can give. So I would like, unless there are some questions, I'd like to move Senate File 807 as amended be passed and referred to the floor.
On Senator Sharon's motion, are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
There's a bit of different heft in the bills, and are there any significant portions that are being removed?
Senator Sharon.
From 807... It really only refers to, I can't remember. I mean, maybe Ms. White could answer the question of, is there anything significant removed from this bill?
Ms. White?
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, a bulk of the child protection provisions that the Senate and House are working on is going to be moving in another bill we passed through the committee that went to Judiciary. The two provisions in this amendment to Senate File 807 are, this Section 2 is an expedited, it's just repealing what was passed last session. There's no monetary or fiscal issues attached to it, and that has an immediate effective date. And then Section 1 is just, you know, reinforcing the fact that the protection of children is a paramount concern. These are two sections that the legislature wanted to move in a separate bill just to expedite it, and everything else is
It's essentially the same as the action you took with this language, 1.9 through and Section 1. It's just sort of that new language is Section 1.
Madam Chair and Ms. White, so basically the language that's not included in the A1 amendment is traveling separately, and we're going to get to it on the floor eventually.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes.
Thank you.
Senator Benson, that bill is in it's moving through the regular committee process. This is just extracting those elements that will be clearly do not have a fiscal policy and clearly allow counties to begin to consider prior reports immediately rather than waiting till the end of session when we have to go through the struggle with the finances.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is such a critical, important provision that certainly I think statewide people have been concerned about. And so I'm just going to ask for a roll call on this particular bill.
Roll call was requested. Roll call granted. Senator Sharon?
I just would renew my motion that we pass Senate File 807 as amended and it be referred to the floor.
And will you take the roll or no? You take the roll.
Did anyone request a roll call?
She just, yeah.
Well, I just asked for a roll call.
Senator Nelson requested a roll call. Please take the roll call.
All right, one moment.
Senator Hoffman?
Oh, yes.
I forgot. I was laughing about it being a roll call. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I was not listening.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Benson?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Wicklund?
Yes.
Senator Lori?
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
Yes.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
The vote being 9 ayes and 0 nays, the motion does pass.
Senator Goodwin? Thank you. Senator Goodwin is presenting two bills, Senate File 141 and Senate File 142. Senator Goodwin, please introduce your bill to us and introduce this as well to those who you are asking to testify to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to offer an amendment first, if that's all right, to Senate File 141.
Is this the first hearing?
A2 okay, amendment.
So Senate file. Do we have the amendment?
Yes. The A2 amendment. This amendment was crafted recently on the advice and the some of the issues that are of the mental health advocates. One of their issues was that they were concerned. Well, maybe I should fit this in with my others, but what we were trying to correct here is that issue of making sure that the mental health centers that we're proposing are also available to, besides being available for people who would otherwise go to jail, that they're also available for others who are in a crisis situation but not going to jail. So we addressed that issue, and we addressed the issue of collaborating with the crisis intervention training and teams and collaborating with the mobile crisis intervention services. That was another issue. They were concerned that we might be trying to take the place of those, which we are not, and think they're very important. The final measure is what Senator Hoffman just brought up about the collaboration of state agencies, and that on line 1.33 to 2.7 is a way to help collaborate between the agencies and provide housing for people in crisis. So with that, I think I would I would like to ask for if somebody would make a motion on that amendment to
Senator Hoffman offers the A2 amendment to Senate File 141. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Passes. To the bill.
And I know that we are limited on time here more than I thought we would be, so I did ask some people to come and testify, and I think you wanted to hold that down, the number down to what?
Well, I think that the time that we have for the two bills is about 25 minutes. So I think your first bill requires a little more time than the second. So I would encourage you to try to keep the bill presentation and testimony to maybe 15 minutes so that we can have some time for questions.
Okay. And then what about people that would like to testify? How many?
That's what I'm talking about, total.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, first of all, then let's start with Senate File 142 because that's a shorter bill, and hopefully that won't take as long.
If that's your preference. We've already had a motion, though, to amend your other bill, and that's on the table. We can lay it on the table for, and we'll lay it on the table, and we'll move to Senate File 142.
Yep, stay here. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I was very interested in the presentation on the mental health system in Minnesota. There's one area that has not been addressed, and it's increasingly getting worse, and that is the issue of people with mental illness that end up in jails and prisons. And the system we have now it is not a system. It's a fragmented group of things that we try to do. This particular bill will combine a lot of those different things in the system to help create an environment where police will be able to bring people to crisis centers rather than to jail. All of the things that we've done in mental health in the last few years have not prevented people from unjustly being put in jail when they really do need mental health help. And in fact, in Minnesota, 30 to 70% of people with mental illness end up in jail. I've traveled the state and talked to people around the state for the last 2 years on this issue, and we really, truly, in Minnesota, are in a crisis situation, and something more collaborative needs to be done. The second bill that we're working on now, 142, is particularly in relation to Beltrami County. We went up there and had quite a conference with all the interested parties and all aspects of the system. The concern there is that 70% or more of people in jail have a mental illness. And that is not the optimal situation. It is not what the police want to do. They have nowhere else to bring them. 150 miles away is the first crisis bed in North Dakota. So that's their option, to bring them to North Dakota. And, of course, they don't have enough beds for all the people in the state of Minnesota, and a lot of people from Minnesota get transferred to North Dakota or South Dakota for crisis beds. We have a tremendous need, but I think of the places I visited, every single place, including the Twin Cities, is having this problem, every single jail. And Sheriff Hodapp has been very instrumental in trying to solve this problem for Beltrami County. And what we want to do in this bill is really help Beltrami County to be able to start a center and to provide these services. I'll let Sheriff Hodapp talk himself about the issues there.
Thank you. Welcome, Sheriff. Sheriff Hodapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I watched the presentation that you just witnessed with great interest, because I noticed on the continuum of care that they presented that slide, in our area and in the region that I represent, we only have about a third of those services, the first third that ends at the crisis team, the mobile crisis team. We don't have anything beyond that. And one of the things that I think it's really important to point out is all of the initiatives that they talked about are really good initiatives, but they don't mention who do they call when someone has a psychiatric breakdown or an episode where they have a break with reality and start assaulting someone in a care facility or something like that. They call law enforcement, and we come, and then we have to take that person somewhere. And in outstate Minnesota, we have no place to go. We go to our emergency room in Bemidji, and they have no place to. There's no beds. They don't have a psych ward in the local hospital, and the nearest hospital that has a psychiatric care facility is in Fargo or Grand Forks or Duluth. So that's the problem that we're faced with, and not only us, but this is a problem in every area in the state, except for, you know, the regional centers like Duluth and Rochester and Fargo-Moorhead probably and St. Cloud. So the rest of the state is dealing with this problem. All the rest of the counties have this problem with what do you do with these folks who are experiencing a mental health crisis. And the people at the hospital tell us the safest place to put them is back in your jail. And that's where they wind up. And then they cycle through the criminal justice system, back out to the street, and back and forth and back and forth. And you see the results of this, you know, in the newspaper when you read about these assaults and shootings and things like that. These are people that we've dealt with over and over again. We can predict what's going to happen because, you know, these are people who are living on the edge of a crisis constantly, and there's no place for them to go to get the kind of treatment that they need. And so we're asking for some help. And in Beltrami County, we're actually positioned very well right now to work on a pilot project. We've got a lot of partners who are willing and ready to jump on this. In fact, we're not sitting on our hands. We are working right now with Center City Housing to get a housing unit built in Bemidji to deal with the homeless population that we have and to manage their issues. But we've got Sanford Bemidji Medical Center who's willing to work with us, Upper Mississippi Mental Health, our Health and Human Services, Northern Dental Access, of course, our jail, the Red Lake Nation, Leech Lake Nation, White Earth Nation, the surrounding counties that are within our catchment area. We've got a huge region that draws a lot of people into our area, and it's a huge problem for us. One little interesting fact for you to think about is in 1980, Beltrami County's population was 30,000. Today, it's about 45,000. So our population increased about 50% in the last 35 years. The jail, average daily jail population was 21.4 in 1980. Today, it's about 130. So that's a 600% increase in our average daily jail population. And 70 to 80% of the inmates in my jail experience mental health problems. And that's diagnosed by our medical care provider that we have hired to provide medical care within our facility. So what does that tell you? You know, we are not dealing with people who are in crisis, and it's a huge problem for us, and particularly in outstate Minnesota, because if all these other services are being provided in you know, the larger metropolitan areas, they're certainly not being provided in outstate Minnesota. So we're in Beltrami County, we're asking for some help here to get us going on a pilot project, and we're ready to go. We're harnessed up and ready to do it. So,
thank you, Sheriff Hodapp. Let's see if there are some questions from the committee on this request. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think you've adequately described a problem that we can all imagine exists, and Senator Goodwin has talked with us about this before, and so I definitely understand the issue, and I don't think jail is a place where anyone should even think that someone with mental illness is going to get the type of help that they need. That's not what our jails are designed for, and so I understand that. I just have a couple questions, though. I don't know that just having a diversion center, a behavioral health diversion center, is actually really going to help people get the services they need. And so my question would be, and I worry about us in government attacking every problem by adding another government entity or solution. And my question would be, could we, and maybe, I hate to put Ms. Abderholden on the spot, but I think she's still here. You know, is this going to help us actually get people the service that they need? I don't know that just a diversional spot is it. And my question would be, would we not be better off appropriating this money to solve this need, but in a different way? Maybe the mobile crisis teams. Could our sheriffs hire the call the mobile crisis teams to come in?
Where's the mobile crisis team going to take the person, though?
Sheriff Hodapp?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Oh, yeah.
That's my question, is where are these people going to go? Because they wind up in our jails. There's no place for them to go.
Thank you, Sheriff Hodapp. I think the question here, and we did hear you indicate that these services simply don't exist. Alternatives to, or at least a intervention for this particular seriously ill people that get picked up by the police all the time or call. There's you travel huge distances to get any of a various sets of services. So what is it that should be built in Beltrami County that responds to this problem? And I think Senator Nelson is asking, is this the best approach for your county?
Well,
and
did Madam you Chair, want to, I did want to continue, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Please let Senator Nelson continue.
Sorry. Thank you. And Madam Chair, thank you for further clarifying. That really is the question, not that the need is – I don't doubt the need whatsoever. I'm just not sure that adding a behavioral diversion hub is actually going to serve that need. And my question would be, can we serve that need using the existing programs that we have in place? So that really is the essence of my question. And it just seems that our mental health system is already so fragmented that I'm concerned that this would be one more fragmentation, and is there a better way? And then
before
you
go on, Senator Nelson, I want to make sure you're looking at are you looking at 142 and not 141?
No, I'm looking at 141.
I thought so. So it's 142 that we've shifted to.
I missed the shift. I'm so sorry. I will withhold my question until the next bill comes up.
That's correct. This is a grant request to Beltrami for the planning and development of a comprehensive mental health service program for individuals under arrest or subject to arrest.
So I will withhold my question until we get to that exact issue. Now you've got some good time to think about it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Goodwin.
I think I could answer your question because it pertains to both bills. And you're talking about the fragmentation of the system. That's exactly what these two bills are meant to address, because what's going to happen is that they're going to have the full services within the facility or connected to the facility. When a person has a mental illness and you tell them, well, okay, I'll take care of you today, but tomorrow you're going to have to go to a psychiatrist over there 2 months from now, which is more like it, and then you're going to have to go somewhere else to look for housing, and then you're going to have to go somewhere else to apply for medical assistance or whatever, that's not going to happen. They're not going to be able to, and they're not going to get the help they need, and they're not going to be able to go on from there. These centers are the first effort we've made to really prevent fragmentation in the system. These are centers that will connect it, and that is exactly what Beltrami County and some of the others are saying that they need, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to have a system that people can use and get continued help back into the community with medication management and things like that.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if Senator Goodwin could talk about, this was talked about as though it was a pilot program, but it's not drafted as a pilot, and it's not drafted to address sort of counties of similar need. And we just went through sort of the flow chart of what our mental health system looks like. So I really need to understand why Beltrami County, why aren't we talking about general needs or areas of weakness? We're working hard to develop a continuum, and I feel like we're putting a patch in something, and I don't understand what's around it or why this isn't actually a pilot program targeted at specific needs, and it's being carved out for one county.
Madam Chair,
it's Senator Goodwin.
It's being carved out for this one county because they have the biggest problems of any area in the state. They only have 25% of their land that's taxable, so they don't have a lot of ways to raise money to do this themselves, because they have state and federal land and reservations. They have more than any other area that I visited, people with mental illness in jail. That don't belong there or wouldn't be there but for. And they also have upcoming mental health issues, with 30% of their babies being born with drugs in their system. This isn't my district, but it's a need that is dramatically there. And not only will that be addressed in this bill, but it will be addressed for other areas in the next bill, because that's a grant that at least half have to go to Greater Minnesota and to develop centers with very specific things that they have to do to get that grant money. And other areas of the state that are in desperate need will also be able to apply for grants to do this. And Bemidji will be able to apply for additional funds from those grants as well as they go along. But the immediate need right now, today, is for Beltrami County. And there's needs all over the state. And there's other holes that I might not have even found out yet, but this one is pretty dramatic.
Senator Laurie and then Senator Hoffman, and then I think we need to move to the next bill or lay this on the table if there's more questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Goodwin, just trying to get a bead on what we get for this $500,000 proposed appropriation for Beltrami County, because it talks about developing a sustainable integrated care model, but it looks like it's just a stakeholder process to talk about what we could do if we did a better job. I'm trying to get a bead on, are there any actual services provided by this grant to Beltrami County, or what exactly are we buying? Maybe you could help understand
Senator
that.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Laurie, why this now is because this is money that they already have put together enough people to get started in doing this that will collaborate their services together. That's why now, because the other bill would be grants that would be applied March 1st of next year, so they have plenty of time for the grants, but they're set up to actually start, and they can use these funds for construction if needed, for buying land if needed, for putting together the programs and for finding other funds to help them build this or remodel a facility or whatever it is they need. That's why this is a separate one.
I'm not sure that's what it says in the bill. Is that what you're referring to, Senator
Laurie? Yeah, that's what I'm referring to, Madam Chair. That's not what is in the language before us in the manner in which I read it. To me, I read it that the grant funds are to convene stakeholders and develop, you know, ideas about what it would mean. And so I just need to try to figure out what we get for this investment.
May I suggest that this will obviously go to finance, Senator Goodwin, that maybe more explicitly describing the purposes for which the grant would be used could be an amendment that you might offer before it gets to the or for us to implement in the Finance Committee should this move through this committee.
Madam Chair, I'd definitely do that.
Okay. And then was it Senator Hoffman?
I'm good, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll reserve my Senator comments till the next bill.
Okay.
And Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Benson.
Given the concerns about carving out for one county and questions about where the money is going, I'd like to move that this move without recommendation to finance, because I don't want to stop this because there might be really good things. But again, I'm concerned about carving out counties when we're trying to build continuity in our mental health system. And so as a member of the Finance Committee, I really want to see this fleshed out.
Thank you. I think that's a good suggestion. And, you know, I think that we're all pretty committed when we get to the Finance Committee to laying out all that's coming in front of us. When you get to building, Senator Laurie's going to have to build a finance bill here, and that the decisions about what goes in will be laid against what we've just learned about the gaps in the system.
That's fine.
We aren't going to be able to fill them all, obviously. But. So Senator Benson moves that Senate File 142 be referred to without recommendation to finance. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Thank you very much. Senator Goodwin, if you would hold for just a moment, we've discovered that transportation is not coming into this meeting room as quickly as possible. I know that we scheduled the meeting till 1:30. If you don't have other appointments, we can continue to meet and hear the testimony on this bill, if that's agreeable. Is there anybody that has difficulty with that at this time?
I have to go.
Some have to go. Some can stay. Why don't we, we'll continue with the next bill, Senator Goodwin. For sure we want to hear the testimony, and then if we need to lay it over for further action later, because I know you've brought your testifiers here to tell the story that you want heard in this committee. So we'll begin then with Senate File 141.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Sheriff Hodapp drove all the way down from Bemidji 5 hours, so I would. He has one last thing he'd like to say, and I know we already voted on the bill, but I'd like to let him say it.
Yes, Senator, Sheriff Hodapp, sorry.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted
almost called you Senator, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to add, and this really applies to both bills, what law enforcement really is looking for here is a hospital or a place where we can take people who are in a crisis that won't turn us away. That's our biggest problem that we've got right now, is we go all over the state trying to find a bed for people, and we get turned away by these hospitals. We'll call from the emergency room all over the place, and everybody says no. The state says no. These hospitals in other states are telling us no, and that's why we wind up going back to our jails and putting people in our jails instead. So that's
all I appreciate it. Thank you, Sheriff Hodapp. We had hearings in my district on mental health initiatives of concern. I'm in southern Minnesota. You didn't mention Mankato area. But this subject came up in the southern part of the state. This is not unique to any part of the state at all, that the jails are being expected to carry the weight for our not having fully invested effectively in the mental health system. So that's what this Senator Goodwin has taken this on, and we very much appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation and understand what it is that you're dealing with, because we're failing to fund the system properly. So with that, we will move to the next bill, Senator Goodwin, and if you could invite your testifiers up so we can make sure, I think Police Chief Mike Goldstein and Judge Jay Quam, is Judge Quam here?
He had to leave.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's been a critical player in this conversation.
He really has.
And Lieutenant Brent Sizer. If you just come ahead, then that saves us the time of waiting for people to come to the table. So is Chief Mike Goldstein still here? Did he have to leave
He had to leave as well, but I've got others here that aren't on your list, if I could add a couple of testifiers.
That's fine. Senator Goodwin, the numbers of people are less important than the description of the problem and what it is you're trying to achieve. So we don't need a lot of testifiers. We need an understanding of what the bill is about and what you're trying to accomplish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To start with Senate File 141, as Madam Chair said, we have not fulfilled all of the gaps in mental health services, and it's been 30 years since we closed the state hospitals. And in those 30 years, it's ended up to be 30% to 70% of people with people in jail have a mental illness, and that is unconscionable. This bill will maintain a simple point of entry and an integrated one-stop full-service center. The savings will occur to local law enforcement, emergency rooms, psychiatric hospital beds, local courts and judicial systems, and jails. The centers will serve the co-occurring disorders of mental illness and chemical dependency, which up to 70% of the people needing crisis beds have both. The centers will develop or help find housing for people with mental illness. And some people have discussed the issue of the Florida facility, which Judge Quam and I went down to see in October. That is compared to the fact that Florida is 49 out of 50 states as far as mental health spending, and that is true. But they have found a solution in Orange County, at least. And of those who successfully finished went through the crisis services and got helped into the community, 92% have not gone back to jail again from 2008 to 2014 because they had extended services. They weren't dropped off from the emergency room or dropped off from the jail or dropped off from the psychiatrist's office. They were followed through into the community, and we have nothing like this now in Minnesota. And there are several other states developing similar programs. Pennsylvania has, Texas has, Missouri is, California, New York, and Minnesota is kind of way behind on dealing with this problem with people in jail with mental illness. So the bill tries to coordinate this very fragmented system that we have that is very difficult for people with a mental illness to maneuver. A friend of mine came over the other day, and she asked me if I'd help try to find crisis services for her son. She couldn't get an appointment for 3 months. He's 19 years old. And he was in a crisis state. And she could get a mobile crisis team is all we could find. And that was great. The mobile crisis team member came over to my house, sat down with the parents and the son, and stayed for about 3 or 4 hours. But had he been having a full-blown psychotic episode, who would have taken care of him that night? I mean, what would they have done that night? You know, they would probably have had to call the police to come and get him. And then with no place to put him, no crisis beds, he would have either ended up in an emergency room where they don't usually have enough psychiatric beds to put him in, so they usually just do something, deal with them, and drop it off. Police in the state of Minnesota have those two choices. They can bring him to jail or an emergency room. They have to sit with that person in the emergency room for 2 to 5 hours before they are treated in the emergency room, and then they're dropped off. They get a cold release from an emergency room. Okay, in Brainerd, not Bemidji, but Brainerd, one officer had to sit for 11 hours in an emergency room, and they would not take care of the person that he brought in. He finally had to charge her with trespassing so he could get her into a jail bed that night. We have a really big crisis here, and the services that we have are wonderful, and they should all work together with these centers, and I think then we can help really resolve this problem. The governor's budget is wonderful. It's got 160 residential treatment beds in it. People that get into these crisis services, if they need longer-term care, they will finally have a place to go. So this works well with what we have and with what the governor and commissioner are proposing. From there, I'm going to let you hear from some people that actually deal with this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, would you say your name? Introduce yourself to the committee.
My name is Brent Sizer. I'm a lieutenant with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I've been with the Sheriff's Office for 30 years, and all of those years of service have been in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Jail. We're here today in support of SF-141, and we're supportive of the concepts that have been laid forth by Senator Goodwin. The Hennepin County Sheriff's Office operates the largest, highest volume jail in Minnesota. By the numbers, we book approximately 36,000 people each year, and this averages to slightly less than 100 people coming through our doors every day. Our jail has an average daily population of over 700 people. This is a population that's similar in size to many small Minnesota towns. We're quite large. 75% of our bookings are repeat customers. The other 25%, it's their first time through the jail. Similarly, 75% of our bookings are released within 72 hours of coming through our door. Their stay is very, very short. It's not very much time for us to have any impact on their condition or their circumstances outside of the facility. We book them in, we feed them, we get them any necessary medical care, and they make their court appearance and they hit the streets right back to whatever circumstances they were in on the day of their arrest. Conservatively, we estimate approximately one-third of our jail population, which equates to about 200 people, to be afflicted by a mental illness, disorder, or other behavioral health concern. Some of these individuals come to jail with a diagnosed mental illness. They self-report to us so they can maintain medication compliance while in custody. Some, perhaps because of stigma, don't self-report to us. But they're eventually identified when they decompensate and or show signs and symptoms necessitating mental health interventions. Now, unfortunately, there is an untold number of individuals who have developed sufficient coping skills outside of the jail, which allow them to fly under the radar, avoiding both diagnosis and treatment. Over the past several years, we have focused attention on some of the issues that arise when those who are suffering from an untreated mental illness come in contact with the criminal justice system. We've made some progress over the last couple of years as we worked with policymakers here at the legislature to pass new laws which seek to speed up the judicial process when we have an inmate in our jail suffering from mental illness. Two laudable changes have been enactment of the 48-hour rule and a change allowing for simultaneous examinations. Now is an opportune time to shift our focus from identifying areas of reform for the mentally ill who are already in the criminal justice system to establishing a system which will keep the mentally ill out of the system. SF-141 represents an important next step and indeed represents an opportunity for what I believe is transformational change to a system that really doesn't work so well. This bill is complementary to some important initiatives that we've already implemented within the Hennepin County Jail, and we seek to establish better ways to address the unique challenges of lower-level offenders who are in need of intervention and treatment for their mental illness. Research has established a clear intersect between homelessness, mental illness, substance abuse, and co-occurring disorders. These are conditions experienced by an unfortunately significant number of persons booked into the Hennepin County Jail. A couple of the initiatives that we've implemented within our jail, these are people already arrested. They're already in the system. The system doesn't let them go, so we can't change that. They have to go through the process. The bill we're looking at is taking them out of this process and getting them into some help before they get arrested and put into jail. But now that they're in jail, here's some things that we're trying to do. We initiated in July an inmate health care enrollment program. We've established an agreement with a couple of community partners who serve as health care navigators. They come into the jail 8 times per month and assist the inmates in signing up for health care or medical assistance. We recognize the importance of community supports and the importance of individuals being released from jail, going back into the community and accessing community providers for their mental health care. Unfortunately, the population that we're talking about here today, they tend to access emergency rooms as their primary clinics. We are hopeful that at some point we will change that and get people connected with their community resources rather than using those emergency resources, which are so costly. So far, we're doing about 45 healthcare enrollments per month. Second initiative that we established is a partnership we have developed with Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health, the Integrated Access Team, which is working in the jail. It's a small team of individuals who go out and meet with specific identified individuals who may be homeless, have mental health issues, substance abuse disorders, co-occurring disorders. They connect with these folks and they actually open cases. They try and do a 90-day intensive follow-up in the community, hook them up with the necessary resources. Housing stability is one of the critical elements that we're talking about. So far, they've interviewed 200 people since October. About 100 have declined voluntary services. It's a voluntary program. And another 100 cases are open to case management with a small group of people within the jail. We're really looking forward to some successes with that. It's difficult
I'm
for us.
I'm really concerned about our time here. May I suggest, Senator Goodwin, that you have adequately described what the problem and the need is. So I think that I'm just going to review what you've already said. I see you have another testifier there, but I want to make sure that, if possible, that you get the questions from the committee about the essence of the bill, which is a grant program. It's for establishing comprehensive behavioral health diversion centers. The money can be used for startup costs and ongoing operating costs of the centers, and 50% of the grants must be forwarded to counties in greater Minnesota with a high poverty rate and a limited degree of mental health services, as was described by your former Sheriff Hodapp. The eligibility for the grants is described clearly in the bill. the requirement for collaboration with local partners, the application process, what it has to describe in the application process, and how the referral occurs, I think, is important, because you've talked about this, that the opportunity here is probable cause, and if there's probable cause that exists for an arrest or a charge with a misdemeanor to a diversion center, and then that, of course, is lifted upon satisfactory completion, which avoids the charge and the sentencing and the requirement that you're describing to move through the entire system. So you add peace officer, court, or prosecutor as a person eligible to refer, and you don't eliminate that the prosecutor may charge the person in the diversion program with a crime. And the request is for $8 million. Now, we aren't going to talk about the $8 million here, but I just want to make sure if we can talk now, with your permission, to the elements of the bill, rather than continuing to describe the problem, if that's an agreement with you. Otherwise, we're going to run out of time, and I won't be able to move this through today. So with that, Senator Goodwin, I'm going to ask if there are any questions about the specific language and proposal that Senator Goodwin is making here to deal with the problems that are being described to us. Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, a peace officer may refer a person with mental illness. Do we have a training in place for peace officers to be able to make determinations if somebody is mentally ill?
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Benson. Yeah, we have a crisis intervention training, and it's a 40-hour program. We have an 8-hour program to allow people to identify. Right now, the police are making the decision whether or not to bring them to jail. So the police are, I believe, qualified to make this decision. Oftentimes, what happens is that they've picked these people up over and over again and had to bring them to jail. So they know the people, they know their history, and they know most of the time whether or not they need a mental health or jail. So that's why we're trusting the police to make that decision. They're making those decisions now. It's just
and
that
referring
they don't
to,
have the option.
I heard your testifiers talk about the decision. The only option is to the emergency room. So the decision is made at that point about that this is a mental illness issue. I prefer to take it to an emergency room, but if the time and the wait time exists substantial using police time, that then that's what encourages a jail solution. Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, I know we're not supposed to talk about finance, but eventually we're going to get to finance. Ongoing operational costs, is that to be borne by the counties?
Senator Goodwin. Chair, that's very well described in the bill, how they have to show that, how they're going to get ongoing costs. In some counties, they collaborate with a bunch of other counties. They can get together and put money in towards ongoing costs. They can look up. There are federal grants through SAMHSA and a couple of new ones coming up. There is also a new, I just found out today, a private foundation that is looking, has over $70 million to spend, and they want to spend it on these kinds of programs. So there are ways that they can get additional funding for the long term. And for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, there's a provision in there that they have to help with short and long-term housing, which is what's happening in the Florida facility. And 30% of the people that come into that facility are chronically homeless, and they have developed some homeless shelters and some homeless longer-term stay. And 50% of the people that have gone through that have stabilized in permanent housing. And right now, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency does have discretionary funds in their alternative loan fund that they could use for this purpose to help the center.
Any further questions or discussion? Did you have another testifier? Is there something you need to add to what our discussion at this point?
Madam Chair, this is Mr. William Ward, who is the director of the Minnesota Board of Public Defense. And quickly, I just want to go through the people that we're here to support and would testify. And there are letters of support in your packets as well. Besides Phil Hodapp, Sandra Westerman and Lieutenant Brent Sizer from Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, Jim Franklin, Minnesota Sheriffs, Mike Johnson, Ramsey County Sheriffs, Chief Goldstein, who had to leave from Plymouth Police Department, Tim Hoskin from Ramsey County Sheriff, William Ward here from the Board of Public Defense, Jay Quam, the judge in Hennepin County, who was in charge of the mental health courts and has worked very hard on this issue, Brian Rushke from the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, Kevin Kyer from the Board of Public Defense, Robert Small from the Minnesota County Attorney Association, and Tom Lehman from the Minnesota Academy of Physicians Assistants. And there also should be a letter of support from Paul Goring from Align Health.
Thank you. And I know that you've been working with NAMI and other groups who are working with you about making sure there's unique character to this that isn't duplicative of other services, crisis centers, and I'm sure that conversation will continue as you move forward. You know, yeah. I think we'll do the same thing with this bill, and that is entertain a motion to pass without recommendation to finance. Or did you?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. It passes. And
as amended.
It's Senate. Let me say that again to make sure we have a Senate file 141 as amended be passed and referred without recommendation to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. It passes. Thank you very much. Again, these meetings are a full hour shorter. I'm sorry if I get sort of tight on the testimony and structure, but that's the way we have to be in order to move the body of work that we have to move through the legislature. So thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.